This is Killer Innovations, a show about ideas, creativity, and how you can innovate. Welcome to the Innovator's Garage, where you learn to create your next game-changing killer innovation.
Welcome to Killer Innovations. I'm your host, Phil McKinney. We are here at the Consumer Electronics Show this year again. We are in the mobile studio. We actually have a repeat guest from last year when we were here at CES, Tim Jarin. Tim, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you. Glad to, I'm able to come and join you again.
Hey, you know, so Tim, you and I have known each other for many, many years, and you know, you were you're a well-regarded analyst in Silicon Valley to a lot of the leading companies, and I know you've been coming to CES for many, many years. I'm always interested in getting your opinion. I mean, show just opened, so I'm sure you've seen a lot of things already. There were the keynotes last night, et cetera. But I'd like to get, you know, some first impressions. What do you think this year's CES, what do you think is kind of the interesting things, the things that are kind of showing what's going to be happening in the future?
Well, this is my 44th CES.
That's got to be a record.
I don't know, but I've been here a lot. And in those years, the show has gone through various stages. It used to be very consumer electronic. Now it's IoT, it's cars, it's the most diverse show I think we've ever had. One big trend that I find really important and interesting is the health area. Mm-hmm. I spent some time at the Sands this morning, especially the top floor, the second floor. I would say about half of the entire exhibit upstairs is health, fitness, and related technology. Everything from the Omron's new blood pressure watch to smart toilets. I even saw a connected bra this morning.
I saw your post on that.
Very interesting, from Spire. And, you know, it's just that I'm intrigued with the whole concept of digital technology impacting people's health. Mm-hmm. And this, the last 2 years we've had it, but this year it's even more emphasized, and I'm seeing more unique startups. The big issue is adding EKG or ECG, right? The blood pressure watch from Omron is very interesting because it's the first of its kind where an individual can literally put the watch on and hit a button and get their blood pressure.
But does it squeeze the wrist like a normal, like a blood pressure cuff?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating. They just got FDA approval 2 weeks ago.
Hmm.
It's the only one of its kind, to date anyway. But that'll be the next holy grail because... You know, I had a triple bypass 5 years ago, six mm-hmm. years ago. I have been very diligent on things related to health, especially in the tech sector, looking at what I can use. As a diabetic, I use the Dexcom glucose monitor so I can get my reading on my watch at any time what my blood sugars are. So, you know, I'm seeing the tools, but unfortunately I'm in a case where I have to use them.
Right.
And it's interesting to me because while I think ECG is important, especially to determine arterial fibrillation, blood pressure is an even more important number to actually be keeping an eye on. Because as they call it, the silent killer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, my point is our world of tech has taken on major challenges in the health industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big deal here at the show.
Interesting. I mean, I remember back when I was at HP, I used to have we had the accessibility technologies, which included, for some reason, we included health technology in that. And CES, the health technology was like this little bitty corner stuffed over in some remote area, and it maybe had like 15 vendors, and that was it. So what you're saying now, though, is it's really moved into kind of this mainstream. Do you think the Apple Watch and some of the capabilities of the Apple Watch is making people more aware of it? Or is there some other driver, you think?
Well, the Apple Watch has helped make it grow. The Fitbits of the world actually kick things off. But basically, the whole idea of that kind of health monitoring started with the Fitbits and the you know, foot step trackers, things of that nature. Apple took that to a higher art. And I got to visit Apple's... testing labs, which is one of the most amazing facilities in the world, where they actually bring in their own people and let them test. They put the machinery on. In fact, one of the doctors that was there was telling me that the actual machinery that Apple uses for testing on to help them tune the technology to be better in steps and BP counts, etc., or heart rate counts. Mm-hmm. Is some of the best equipment in the world, and that most hospitals don't even have.
Wow.
And so Apple is constantly fine-tuning that and expanding its capabilities. And I wouldn't be surprised if the next holy grail for them is the blood pressure on the iPhone as well sometime in the next year.
Interesting. But I think you're right. You know, as we get, you know, those of us who are getting older, right, we become the users, you know, these kinds of these technologies. Yeah. And they appreciate it much, much more, I think.
Yeah. There's one other thing that was introduced here, and it's kind of interesting. When I saw it, I actually thought of you, because years ago when you were at HP, you showed me this first rollable paper.
Flexible display.
Yeah, flexible displays. And that now, again, that was way ahead of its time, by the way, and you saw it, thankfully. But the bottom line is flexible displays now are becoming a significant opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, LG just showed this rollable television.
I was over there this morning. Wasn't it amazing?
It's absolutely staggering.
And it's a 4K. The color on it I couldn't even imagine, albeit I haven't been involved in flexible display work in seven years. But you look at the progress they've made from the black and white, very tender kind of materials to now a full 4K rollable display that LG was showing.
It's
amazing.
It's huge, too. It's not even a small display.
No. It's big. It's big.
It's 65 inches.
Yeah, it is huge. And the durability, because right, that was always the problem with flexible displays, was material durability.
Yeah.
It just shows, though, that, you know, don't ever underestimate the engineers.
Yeah, and to be fair, what has happened, there's been a major breakthrough in flexible displays out of China.
Mm-hmm.
Three major companies over there, and including now Samsung, with their foldable tablet smartphone.
Right.
And so that's represented here in a couple of ways. Flexible displays are represented in a lot of different ways here. I saw actually one last night. It was kind of funny. Is he actually had it in a top hat, and the screen was around the brim, right? And he was just showing off, you know, the fact that we can do this kind of technology. I don't know if there is a business case for a folding smartphone that turns into a tablet. I like the innovation and ingenuity that's going into the design, and I wouldn't be surprised if out of that comes some really fascinating device in the future. But this shows the LG rollable is the first one to apply to television.
Right.
And that's a big breakthrough. And I think you'll see much of the other television companies, TV companies, the Samsungs of the world, Vizios, and you know everyone else. I don't know how far behind they are, but just the concept of it is fascinating.
Yeah, because in the early days of flexible displays, a lot of it was digital signage, right? It was price tags on shelves in grocery stores to replacements for in posters because the refresh rates weren't all that great. But when I saw that LG display today.
Yeah, beautiful. The other thing that
mind blowing
when you go through that area, because that's Television City, right?
Right.
Is the 8K's television.
Mm-hmm.
LG's 8K OLED set is one of, and this ridiculously thin.
Yep.
Is just magnificent.
Yep.
And, we don't even have enough content for 4K yet. We're pushing 8K, but the reason that 8K is a big buzz is that in 2020, the Tokyo Olympics will be actually shot in 8K.
Yep.
So all of the big TV companies are rushing to try to bring 8K out, and they're hoping that the Olympics will be the jumping ramp to actually see 8K take off. Now again, we're limited in 4K. Whether the content guys will jump right to 8K, I don't know.
Well, it's interesting because part of the 2020 Olympics, the cable operators in Japan, such as J:COM, are required to be able to distribute 8K
right
on their cable plant. So I've had a little bit of insight on their work on delivering 8K, and the ability to get 8K cameras in volume to shoot content, to get content to be produced. But, you know, this is one of the things we've looked at is 8K. Is it really resolution or is it color dynamic?
It's depth of color.
Right. It's the high dynamic range.
It's true black.
Right, exactly. And the whole range of color. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Tim and get more insights on what's going on here in Las Vegas, Consumer Electronics Show. You're listening to Kill Innovations on the BizTalk Radio Network.
This is Killer Innovations, a show about ideas, creativity, and how you can innovate. Welcome to the Innovator's Garage, where you learn to create your next game-changing killer innovation.
Welcome back to Innovation. So, Tim, we were talking about flexible displays and high dynamic range. We actually did a test where we showed just normal HD, and we had 4K. But in the normal HD, we had high dynamic range. We actually added it as a color corrected high dynamic range content, and we asked consumers to pick which one was the 4K. They always picked the color, which is interesting, right? It wasn't the resolution. It's that the human's eye perception, the ability to perceive color, I think is actually, you know, just as important as resolution on the displays.
Well, and I think that's part of the issue with both 4K and 8K is you get depth of color in ways you never had before.
Right.
I can't, if you actually stand in front of either an 8K or 4K, you can actually tell a little bit that the 8K is sharper, but it's not that noticeable unless you're really close.
Will it drive a consumer buy cycle?
Eventually it will, because I do think that you may hit the limit with the 8K. Believe it or not, they're working already on 12K and 16K, but I think the eye's ability to actually perceive and see this, that many pixels, let's say, that you get into the 8Ks or the 12Ks or whatever the next big bump's going to be, it's negligible at that point on. But television industry always wants to move forward, and they want to get better and better and better. So, you know, if there's engineers, they're going to give it a shot.
Yeah, but if I go back to my HP days, right, once you get above, like, you know, laser printer that can do 1200 DPI or 2400 DPI. Why? You know, that's not where the investment in R&D should be going.
No.
Type of a thing. So what else did you have a chance to see?
There's one other area that's fascinating to me here. And it's intriguing because I got this, I've seen this come over the last 2 years, but it goes back to health to some degree. And it turns out that hearing aids have been really a closed business for decades. And some of them are just ridiculously expensive. Mm-hmm. They can be in the $4,000 to $8,000. There's been real movement in audiology and the sound technology chip, especially stuff coming from Qualcomm, that allows you to get headphones or earbuds, let's say, that can serve as lower cost hearing aids. And so I saw two or three of these already in the last couple of days, but I met with the folks from Starkey last night.
Mm-hmm.
And what intrigues me about the Starkey piece is he's not only doing the audio enhancing of the hearing, but he's actually tying it to phone. So that it has Alexa in it. It has a voice translator in mm-hmm. it. And based on the software layers, he can add more features to it. One of the things that is really missed by the tech sector, who's going into especially the next generation of what I call spatial computing, which includes AR and VR especially, mm-hmm. is they're paying a great deal of attention to the optics. But they're not paying a lot of attention to the audio.
Did you see Mark Andreessen's
yes.
post on this week?
I did. And Mark's, you know, that's exactly what basically Mark said is Apple really nailed it with the AirPods in the sense that you've got somebody speaking in your ear. And that's a critical part, I believe, of what will happen with AR and VR in the future, especially with AR. When you have AR glasses, you're not going to put the audio in the glasses, as you're not putting the computing power in the glasses. It's going to come from the smartphone, at least for another 5 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. The technology's not there to get the miniaturization needed to put it into what we call real glasses, regular glasses that anybody would see. But you're going to have to augment the audio part of it. And Apple could do that, of course, with the AirPods. This thing from Starkey would let you do that at a much less cost.
Well, and I heard, I haven't seen the Starkey's product yet, but I've heard from a few people who have seen it, that they're almost moving it towards a wearable medical device with some of the things they're thinking about putting into it.
Yeah. Now, I don't believe there's allowed to do heart rate and others, but one that I saw last night, and I forget the name of it, but theirs did do heart rate and gave feedback on certain health type issues.
Right. Yeah.
But again, my only point is that this show is not an audiology show. Although you get, you know, huge headphones and, you know, the Panasonics and the Bose are here. But personal audio, extended beyond the concept of just hearing music, to where the information that you're getting is coming through that, to whether it be directions or, you know, news updates, etc., on demand.
I want that. What I want is I want to interface with LinkedIn. So I run into somebody at Showstoppers tonight, and I should know their name, but I don't know their name.
That would be great.
I get it whispered in my ear, like, oh, that's Joe, and the last time you met him was in 2010 at an HP event.
Yeah, well, those types of things, and again, AI is going to let that happen at some point. The other thing that's interesting at this show is, as I said earlier, this is everything connected. IoT is here in a big sense with home, and there were two announcements, or one announcement specifically, but there were others afterwards that I found significant, is the fact that Samsung is bundling the Apple TV app in their TV now.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, that happened the day before CES. And since then, LG and I forget who else is doing it as well. And what you're seeing is Apple opening up a couple of things. Not only the Apple TV app to competitors, but also AirPlay.
Okay.
And what Apple is setting the ground rules now for, I think, really expanding what they're going to do with their services business. You and I have lived through the iPod era. And as you know, the original iPod was not successful. It was good, and it revolutionized the concept of how to bring in MP3. But when it took off is when Apple let it go to the PC side of the business, not just the Apple side. When PC guys could run the iPod app on an IBM PC or a clone.
You can thank Carly for that.
You got it. And and it took off like crazy.
Right.
And Apple still has much of a closed system today, but because their services business is bringing $10 billion in a quarter, and it's expanding at 17 to 18% per quarter, you have to believe that that's going to be a dedicated focus on their rising revenue part of their business, especially if they start to get headwinds on the iPhone itself and things of that nature.
Yep. Say, Tim, just want to say thanks for taking the time. Wrap this up so we can get back onto the show floor. As always, greatly appreciate you spending the time giving us your insight into what the hot items are on the floor here at CES. And thanks for joining us.
Glad I could do it.
We'll be right back after this short break.
This is Killer Innovations, a show about ideas, creativity, and how you can innovate. Welcome to the Innovator's Garage, where you learn to create your next game-changing killer innovation.
Welcome back to Co-Innovations. I do want to just again extend my appreciation for Tim Bajaran from Creative Strategies for taking the time out of this crazy show here in Las Vegas at CES to give us his thoughts early in the show as to what were some of the innovations that he thought were interesting. Now, I've known Tim for years. He's an extremely well-known analyst in Silicon Valley. He was very close to Steve Jobs back in the iPod days and the iPhone days, etc. Tim also, just for full disclosure, was an analyst that did cover HP while I was there as the CTO. And that's where he and I really spent a significant amount of time and got to know each other. Now, he's always got great insights. He's got a unique perspective of being in the Valley for decades and decades and decades. He's seen the wins, the losses, ideas that look good but never execute. So he has that unique perspective, and he's got enough skepticism, I guess I would call it, in order to be able to have a better than most anybody else's chance of picking a winner or picking a loser. Now, some of his comments that he's mentioned in segment one and segment two, I want to go back over those again and maybe give you a little bit more of my thoughts. We started off the conversation on the level of innovation in medical and healthcare monitoring. This is something, as Tim shared, it's a personal passion and interest for him, given, you know, he did have quadruple bypass a couple of years ago. It was a big scare. He's been very conscious of his health and monitoring his health and et cetera. For me, it's an interest that I've had for quite some time. You know, the accessibility in medical and healthcare devices, technologies at HP reported to me while I was there as CTO. So I had an opportunity to kind of see what the role and benefit of technologies are, but particularly around enabling aging in place. Our average age is increasing, and as a result, we need to find ways to support people in the home. So, and after Tim pointed out his observation, I checked through to see what some of the other healthcare technologies are there, and some of them are very, very exciting. I'll talk a little bit more about those here in a second. Also, the changing display with innovations like flexible display. Now, it has been 7 years. If you haven't gone out and checked, you can go out to YouTube and just search for Phil McKinney, flexible display. And there's probably hundreds of YouTube videos of me talking about and demonstrating flexible displays. And this is a work that, again, I was very passionate about. Now, I have not done it since I retired from HP and took on the CEO role here. So I'm not as close to it anymore, but I'll tell you, what I saw at CES with LG's rollable display and some of what we saw in digital signage, etc., very, very exciting. And then the innovations coming in hearing aids. Now, I have required hearing aids for many years, but you'll find that I rarely use them. In fact, most cases, I only use my hearing aids when I am in a public place, typically when I'm on stage giving a speech, because in my case, my hearing aids will actually help me be able to hear questions from the audience. So if I do a speech and I get to the end of that talk and I open it up for Q&A, the hearing aids help me out. About a year ago, I received a set of hearing aids from Ergo. So it's E-A-R-G-O. We'll put a link in the show notes. To try out and test. Now, disclaimer, they gave me these hearing aids. I didn't pay for them. So I'm just being fully, full disclosure here. And I have been listening and using those again on and off. I'm not a consistent user of hearing aids, even though I should be. I lost a good chunk of my hearing in my right ear as a teenager, high school, college kid, based on the work that I did at that time. So if you're standing on my right side, I'm probably not going to hear what you're saying to me. But The Ergos was really a breakthrough. And in fact, they've won multiple innovation awards for their hearing aids. Someone who used to work for me at HP's husband is involved with Ergo. So just, you know, so there's a personal connection. And I think what they've done has been really, really exciting. But again, I don't wear them all the time. Now at CES, I met with the head of innovation at Starkey, who I would predict, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm going to predict that one of the largest hearing aid manufacturers in the world. They're just massive in relation to the hearing aid industry. And the head of innovation shared with me what they're working on, and they asked for some feedback and, you know, ideas for their work, which I gladly provided. You know, I'm pretty good about giving advice to just about anybody. It's exciting about what the changes are that are happening in the hearing aid industry. And again, as Tim pointed out earlier in the show, this is not a typical device that you would have found at a CES, but the role of technology, the role of innovation, the impact they can have on personal lives, it's had a big change. And as I stated with Tim earlier in the show, you know, as we get older, and you know, Tim and I are about the same age. He's got grandkids. I have grandkids. And as we get older, we're all becoming users of these new medical and health monitoring innovations. And as we get older and the average lifespan extends and the lack of nursing home facilities, professional care facilities, etc., these kinds of innovations and these kinds of technologies are going to become increasingly more important. Now, what I also like is Tim's also a skeptic, which I like, because he's seen the failures. Now, he and I both shared some doubts earlier in the show about the chase for ever-increasing resolution of displays like 8K, 12K, 16K, and when the human eye struggles to even appreciate that increasing resolution. This is what I call a feature war. A feature war is when an industry locks onto a feature and then trains the customer to buy the product that has the best offering in that specific feature. It's kind of the hook to get a customer to buy. For example, printers used to be sold on DPI, dots per inch. Now, you know, back, if you remember, we started off at 75 dots per inch, and then we went to 150 dots per inch, right? And then it was 300 and 500. Well, once we got to 1200 or 2400 dots per inch, the human eye cannot perceive it. So why? But that's a feature that we've sold into the customer. Customer walks into the store and he looks at it, and one printer's got 1200 DPI, another printer has 2400 DPI. Which one does the consumer buy? The 2400 DPI. Same thing with screen resolution, 4K. Well, 8K, 8K must be better than 4K. 12K must be better than 8K. What's the limit? It's even cars with miles per gallon, and it's camera with photo resolution. For innovators, you need to be aware of this feature war. So whatever innovation you're working on, consider how you position it in the market to avoid a future feature war. The feature war may not be in place at the start. And remember, a feature war starts once the customer has been trained to compare a specific feature as the differentiation. Pick your differentiation very, very carefully. I can tell you, walking around the show floor so far at CES, everybody's getting caught in this feature war, and that's how they're positioning it. Whether it's resolution, number of colors, diagonal dimensions of a display, battery storage, whatever the feature set is, so be very careful. You want to set a differentiation that truly is a differentiator in the marketplace. Now, as I reflect back, include the comments from Bob O'Donnell, Technalysis, and Steve Guggenheim at Microsoft, and what Tim shared, the 2019 CES show is really the show of incremental innovations, things that come across natural steps, autonomous cars to autonomous flying cars, bigger and bigger displays, better audio. And the CE industry has settled into this tick-tock cycle of innovation. The even year is the year of high-impact innovations. The odd year is the year of incremental innovations, and we're in an odd year. Now, this doesn't apply to every company in the show. Over the next few weeks, we will bring you companies who we met at CES who will share their innovation story and the resulting product and services they feel are the game changers. So, if you have an innovation that you think is going to have a big impact, let us know. Just drop me a note. We are going to take a quick break, then let's jump in and tackle this week's killer question with the objective of challenging ourselves to see new opportunities for innovation. We will be right back.
This is Killer Innovations, a show about ideas, creativity, and how you can innovate. Welcome to the Innovator's Garage, where you learn to create your next game-changing killer innovation.
Back in the early days of this show, I would share what I called a killer question in each episode. These questions were designed to be used in your personal team or organization innovation efforts. Now, based on feedback from listeners like you, we've decided to bring it back with some improvements. Each episode of the Killer Innovations has a segment that I'm now calling 5 Minutes to New Ideas. They are designed for the creative mind looking for that next great idea. Each episode will challenge you to think differently about your business, your products, your services, and yourself by asking unique, funny, and sometimes crazy questions. These questions are designed to force you to look beyond the obvious and to uncover those ideas and opportunities you never before considered. So, get out your notebook and be ready to uncover that game-changing idea. Here is 5 Minutes to New Ideas. A few years ago, a passenger complaint letter to Virgin Atlantic circulated around the web. It was very long, fully illustrated with photos, and clearly somewhat tongue-in-cheek, and very funny. But it made a few good points about the bad food and bad service this particular passenger had experienced on a recent flight. Almost 3 years later, it still occasionally shows up as one of the most read stories at telegraph.co.uk. In 2009, another disgruntled passenger created a music video about how United Baggage Handlers had broken his $3,500 guitar. He uploaded the song to YouTube, and to date, has been viewed tens of millions of times. United's customer service department, which had originally denied him any kind of compensation, quickly changed their minds as the video went viral. They adjusted their tone from defensive to humorous and held a meeting with the passenger. Eventually, the airline made a charitable donation to a jazz school in his name. The problem is that none of their existing former or potential customers care that United eventually resolved the customer complaint. All they remember is that it took a funny song and 9 million YouTube hits before the airline would do the right thing. United responded about as nimbly and elegantly as a dad trying to decode what their kids' friends are saying at their kid's birthday party. Not pretty. The point is, it's easier than ever to find out what your customers are thinking and saying about you these days. It's also much easier for their opinions to go viral, so it's imperative that you respond to your customer with the same speed and immediacy they use to critique you. Social networking sites have fundamentally changed the nature of the customer complaint. Customer complaints are morphing from one-off exchanges between a customer and a service representative into an ongoing conversation, often in real time, visible to the public, and open to anyone who cares to comment. By monitoring these sites, you can hear what your customers are saying about you without them even being aware that your opinions are being heard. Back when I was CTO at HP, I found out about a notebook hinge problem through Twitter. How? I have Hootsuite app up all the time, and I use it to search for any tweet related to products or services that I'm interested in. One day, I was sitting in my office, and a customer tweeted he was having a problem with a hinge on his HP notebook. Complaint got my attention. I put down what I was doing and went to respond to the tweet, but before I could even get my hands on the keyboard, another customer replied. The customer said, quote, "It's a known problem and HP has a repair protocol."
A few seconds later, he used a second tweet to direct the customer to the customer service number. What? I was a CTO, and even I had no idea that we, A, had a problem, or B, had a solution. Yet here was a customer who was at least two steps ahead of me. I grabbed the phone, dialed the product team, and asked, "What's this I'm hearing about a problem with the hinges on one of our notebooks?" The person on the other end nearly had a heart attack. His department was carefully preparing the internal email describing the problem, and suddenly the CTO is breathing down his neck, asking him, "What the heck is going on?" The reality is, you can no longer keep problems like this off the radar, either within your organization or with your customers. The only option is to engage with the people who care enough to make their feelings public. And don't stop at simply resolving an issue. The customers who take time out to post their opinions or direct others to solutions are the ones who have actually thought about what you do and how you do it. Odds are, if they've complained about what you're doing, they've also thought about ways to do it better. So ask yourself, any others on your team, who complains about my product? Ask. And do not blow them off. Dig deeper to understand why they took the time to raise the issue with you. You may be surprised where the complaint breadcrumbs may lead you. I'm Phil McKinney, and thanks for listening. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join in. If you have any comments or suggestions, drop me a note at phil@killerinnovations.com. Beyond this show, I write about my personal experiences of being in the innovation game for the last two decades. Topics include innovation, creativity, culture, team building, metrics, frustrations, leadership, and how to win. You can find that content over at philmckinney.com. You can also find out information about my book, Beyond the Obvious, including extensive excerpts over at beyondtheobvious.com. You can find hardcover, digital, and audio versions of my book on Amazon or wherever you get your books from. Now, the reason I started this show back in 2005 was to pay back my early mentor. My first mentor, Bob Davis, invested an immense amount of time in training and coaching me, which had a major impact on my career. When I went back and asked him how I could pay him back, he laughed and said I couldn't. I had to pay it forward. If I could ask for a favor, could you help me pay it forward? How? One, by giving us a rating wherever you get your podcast, as that helps spread the word. And two, by telling others about the show. If you want to be part of the conversation between the shows, I hang out in the Innovators community on Slack. The Innovators community is a private community of vetted innovators who help each other succeed. Check it out at theinnovators.community. This episode of Killer Innovations was produced by the Innovators Network. You can find the show notes and the entire show catalog going back to 2005 at killerinnovations.com. I'll talk to you next week, and in the meantime, go out and change the world with your killer innovation. Bye-bye.